Hello, everyone, and welcome to Punk Lotto Pod, the podcast game where no one wins. I am your co-host, Justin Hensley, and I am joined by my other co-host...
Dylan Hensley.
I had to think about that.
This is the podcast where we use a random number generator to select a year between 1976, the year when punk was born, and the present day, and then an album and an EP from said year based on the Rate Your Music charts.
Specifically the punk charts, and we tend to use the United States user rating basis just because we don't want to wind up with Italian screamo bands and... you know, German noisecore groups that we've never heard of before.
Yeah, the international user base of Rate Your Music tends to skew more esoteric, more obscure than even the general, than the United States Rate Your Music user base, which is also still kind of like on the nerdy side of like, oh, their demo was the best.
Yeah.
Kind of mentality, but it comes up with more bands you've heard of.
Yeah, that's definitely the point. So, using our random number generator, we wound up with the year 1986, and I kind of just want to set the table for what 1986 looked like, because...
A decade into punk?
It was not a good year for punk. At this point...
Is it a bad year?
It's not a great year. There's some good stuff, obviously. There's good stuff every year.
It's not the big stuff.
No.
Though. It's not Minor Threat and... Yeah.
No. This is probably one of the biggest albums that came out this year as far as, like, punk history is concerned, you know, as far as the legends, you know, prior to 86 would be, like, Dead Kennedys' Bedtime for Democracy, which is their worst album.
That came out in 86. Yeah.
So let's look, this is, 1986 is when, like, a lot of the founding hardcore and punk bands were gone, essentially. Like, they'd already broken up. And before, like, the more popular, like, post-punk, post-hardcore bands like Fugazi started. So, this year was Big Black's Atomizer.
Right.
Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, Your Funeral, My Trial. Susie and the Banshees, Tinderbox. Here's an example. Samhain, or Samhain, depending on what the actual pronunciation is. November Coming Fire came out that year. Cro-Mags, Age of Quarrel.
Yeah, I was going to say Age of Quarrel, that's one of the bigger ones. And what Can I Say by Dag Nasty?
Yeah, Bad Brains, Eye Against Eye. The first Firehose album, Raging Full On. So, yeah, you see like the first side projects of legends, you know, a couple Swans albums. Apparently there were two Nick Cave albums. Yeah, Dead Milkmen, Eat Your Paisley, you know, a band I don't care for. Agnostic Front's Cause for Alarm.
It's not even like the Dead Milkman.
No, it's not the one
you want.
So cool. Well, the first album we came up with kind of fits in perfectly with what we were just saying about a weird transistory period. So the random number generator gave us number 120 on the albums chart, and we have TSOL's Revenge. Did you know what TSOL stood for?
True Sons of Liberty?
It's True Sounds of Liberty.
Ah.
I always thought it was Sons as well, but apparently it's Sounds.
Hmm.
So, what'd you think?
I liked it.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, I liked it a lot, actually.
Really?
It's not what I expected.
Not at all. I had a completely different idea of what they sounded like. And I think I was thinking of more what suicidal tendencies and like DOA were doing in the late 80s.
Yeah, that's more of what I expected it to sound like too.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's got a very like Sam Hain kind of sound, like a also sounds a little bit like Billy Idol. But I liked that.
Yeah, I can see that. I kept hearing, and I saw a lot of comparisons to this, like a very Jim Morrison vibe to the vocals.
Yeah.
You know, minus the dumb Doors music, but...
Come on, baby. Yeah.
There's a little...
Yeah. I mean, I definitely got, like, a Danzig-y sort of, like...
You know. Yeah. Like, Danzig the band. Not yeah. just Danzig himself, but, like... Yeah, and, like, in the guitar playing, I feel like I heard a little bit of that bigger, I guess, guitar, a little slower.
At times, vocally, it reminded me a little bit of Guy Picciotto, Rites of Spring, like in the more like higher up there, kind of like screamier vocal stuff. And then some of the guitar playing too reminded me of Embrace. So I think it fits really well in that time period, in the Dag Nasty, Embrace, Revolution Summer-ish
yeah.
sound.
Yeah, it's kind of... I did a lot of research on this band because I found out their history. It was just kind of very surprising, and I'll get into that in a little bit. But I noticed that this was a continuation of a sound that they were working on. So, like, when TSOL start off, they were kind of that typical L.A. punk, you know, hardcore. The, you know, just, like, kind of, like, scaling guitars and, you know, where everybody sounded exactly the same.
Yeah.
But then they wound up evolving their sound to a little more of a like a death rock sort of thing.
Yeah,
you know, kind of horror punk, but not as, you know, over the top as like say the Misfits.
More of the sound and not so much the imagery.
Yeah, yeah. This was TSOL's fourth studio album. They also had a couple EPs in there too that are well regarded, and it's their second on Enigma Records, which is a label I am not familiar with at all.
No, I don't know that one.
Let me look them up. Enigma Records is from Culver City, California. Founded in 1981.
A lot of big names. 7 Seconds, 45 Grave, Agent Orange.
Yeah, 45 Grave is probably... That was the band I was thinking of when it... What this reminded me of. And which will make sense once we get into where some of these songs appeared on. Which you might find very entertaining. Yeah, who else is on there?
Everybody.
Motley Crue, Motorhead,
G.G. Allen, The Cramps. What did they put out by Husker Du?
I have no idea.
The Living End? Like, the last live record? Because everything was SST until...
Warner Brothers.
Candy Apple Gray and Warehouse was on Warner Brothers. So it had to have been, like...
Wire. Let's see. They might be Giants. Striper. Sonic Youth, Slayer, God, they've put out like everything. I wonder if it was a label that did a lot of distribution.
Weird.
Strange. It's a more important label than I realized. They're probably not even around anymore, though.
Hawkwind, Devo, and they're saying Minutemen, but again, that was SST, so...
Like everything Minutemen put out was on SST.
Okay, well, let's look at the history of the label, because that might...
Yeah.
The label's first release was Motley Crue's Too Fast for Love.
God damn.
It was under the band's own record imprint, but manufactured, marketed, and distributed by what would become the Enigma Records team. It was distributed through Jim. And then in 84, they entered a joint venture with EMI. They signed Red Hot Chili Peppers. One of their biggest commercial successes was the Christian rock band Striper.
Strange that they were a commercial success. I mean, I'm looking at the Minutemen discography, and I don't see anything about Enigma Records anywhere in here.
Reissues of material licensed from other labels, Straight Records, Bizarre Records, Discreet, released film soundtracks, so they did Terminator soundtrack. They released some Mute Records titles, so that's where your Sonic Youth come from. No, Daydream Nation was originally released on Enigma Records.
There you go.
So I don't know how all these SST bands are listed on here. So maybe they just like did re-releases, and I don't know.
Weird. I do see something where Minutemen released some music on New Alliance, and I'm wondering if New Alliance and Enigma wound up becoming the same label at some point, or maybe it absorbed. I don't know. Interesting. Well,
weird little caveat there.
Yeah, into the Enigma Records history.
Welcome to Enigma Cast, where we dig through the Enigma Records discography.
We're very limited. So yeah, the lineup on this band, or this album, is... Okay, I'm going to go back to a little bit to their history before I get into the lineup on this album. So, in 1983, the founding vocalist and guitarist Jack Grisham and the drummer Todd Barnes left the band. So, they were replaced by Joe Wood on vocals and guitar and Mitch Dean on drums. Now, this album is the second album with Joe Wood and Mitch Dean in the lineup. And the rest of the lineup is the original guitarist Ron Emery and the original bass player Mike Roche. So, because this is the second vocalist, I made a point of going back and listening to some of the earlier releases to, you know, tell the difference between Jack Grisham and Joe Wood. And I definitely like Jack Grisham's vocals better. The original vocals. He had, like, a much wider range. And his voice was higher. Like, he was kind of in, like, a Jello Biafra range, but not as... Not as high as that, you know.
Not as awful.
Yeah. Hey, I love those first two Dead Kennedys records. This album was also notable for being the first album produced by Howard Benson. And do you know that name?
Yes. That is familiar.
Do you know why that's familiar?
I'm looking it up.
Well, he produced some of the biggest albums by POD and Blindside. So that's our personal relation to this producer.
He did Three Cheers for Sweet Revenge by My Chemical Romance.
Yeah, he
did multi-platinum records for All American Rejects, Hoobastank, Flyleaf, Daughtry.
Mm-hmm.
So he's a big name rock producer.
Yeah. Which
and his first two albums that he produced were TSOL Records, Revenge and Hit and Run.
Yeah. Oh boy. Hit and Run. That's probably the worst TSOL album because it sounds like fucking Motley Crue.
Oh.
Yeah. So I own a copy of the book American Hardcore, and I was wondering, you know.
The most inessential.
Yeah. It's a great introduction piece. Like, it really introduces you to American hardcore music in the, you know, late 70s, early 80s. But then the author, Stephen Bush, all of a sudden decides that hardcore died in 1986. And, you know, nothing of note was released after or whatever. And he has bullshit.
Yeah.
Just kind of a dumbass.
Blowhard.
Yeah.
Just the... I remember reading that book and, like, probably, like, the first third of it, I'm like... This is all really interesting, like, you know, pretty good objective history. And then, like, I got maybe halfway through and I'm just like, oh my God, dude, not everything that you didn't personally have a connection to sucked.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really...
He just spends so much time just kind of, like, talking about all the bands that he worked with. And
yeah, because he was a promoter? Was that what he was?
Promoter. Yeah. I think, and then maybe did some, I don't know, maybe did like some writing for MRR or something, I don't know.
So in the book, he compares this TSOL to Aerosmith and Guns N' Roses, and that just shows you he doesn't know what the hell he's talking about, because they don't sound anything like either one of those bands.
No, I mean, it's definitely forwardly rocky sounding, like it's, yeah, it's definitely more rock-oriented, but it doesn't sound like Guns N' Roses.
No, I would compare it more to like... The Cult or you know one of those dark hard rock bands, you know, which is what they were trying to do. Now later releases do sound like Motley Crue and, you know, hair metal, and they're really bad, but did you have any songs that you actually liked, like really liked?
Let me look at the track listing real quick.
I personally really like the song Madhouse. It was like one of the faster songs. It's like in the middle of the album.
Yeah, I mean, the title track stood out. No Time, the first track.
Mm-hmm.
I dug it. Yeah, Madhouse, Revenge, Change Today, those three songs in a row are pretty solid.
Yeah.
I just enjoyed the general sound of the record.
You know, I guess I never really said my opinion. I didn't really like it all that much. I thought it was okay. I wasn't a fan of Joe Wood's vocals, and this is before I even went back and listened to Jack Grisham to compare. I just wasn't, I don't know, super into it. I thought the music was fine, and it definitely did remind me of like Samhain or something like that. My favorite song on the album, though, was the last track, "Everybody's a Cop."
Yeah, that's a really good one.
It felt the most LA punk, I guess, out of every song on the album.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought the guitar playing was interesting. I didn't like the drumming at all. It has that 80s big drum sound that I'm not a fan of in general.
Yeah, very gated reverb.
Mm-hmm. But I do like the guitar tone, which makes sense because... Though I wonder how much of the guitar was the original guitar player or how much of it was Joe Wood. It could be... I don't know. Could be. Because there is one album by TSOL with the original lineup that's kind of like Peer Ubu-esque. But even like kind of Devo-y. Like they had like keys on it. And it's very arty. I was very surprised by that album. I think it's the second full-length album.
So I'm looking at the second song on the album, Nothing For You.
Mm-hmm. Did you find it?
Yeah, it was used in the soundtrack for the 1985 horror film Return of the Living Dead.
Yes, it was.
It's
the first sequel to Night of the Living Dead. Yeah, Day of the Living Dead. Those came out
before. Dawn of the Dead was before.
Yeah, Dawn of the Dead was in the 70s, yeah.
But yeah, Return of the Living Dead is the alternate sequel.
Right.
It's the other guy, the not Romero.
Yeah. Director, producer. Yeah. And then it went on to spun off its own like crazy number of sequels too, which supposedly are not very good, but I don't know. Return of the Living Dead's great because it's kind of campy. And
yeah, it's the schlocky 80s horror. I didn't know it took place in Louisville. That's funny.
I had no idea. It has...
But that's got the Tar Man zombie.
Yeah.
The classic.
I love...
Which, that film, the first time I saw it, was at our grandparents' house.
Yep. With our dad in the living room.
With our dad in the living room. Yeah. And he was just watching this. It had to have been a holiday.
I don't know.
Because it was like a family gathering. It was. I don't know why this movie was on during a holiday, but it was.
Yeah, I don't know if it was like a Thanksgiving or if it could have been like a birthday maybe of someone. I don't know. It does feel like there were a lot of
a cousin's birthday.
It does feel like there were a lot of people there. But for some reason we were the only ones in the living room. I do remember because there's like a real famous scene in the movie where like the punks are in the graveyard and having a rager. And, like, this girl, like, rips her top off in the movie. I do remember my dad going, they're not going to show this, are they? Before the scene. And then, like, what they do is they cut it immediately when she, like, rips her shirt. So, like, you don't see. Because it's a TV edit. Of course they're not going to show it.
Yeah.
But it's just funny that he knew exactly what was coming. And he was like, wait a minute. I wonder if he had his finger on, like, the button getting ready to change it in case.
Oh, shit.
I just love that there. They're not going to show this, are they?
That's the, yeah.
What's cool about that movie is it does have a really neat soundtrack. Like it's...
Yeah, a lot of punk.
Yeah. Death Rock, Grey 45, TSOL. I tried to find the scene in the movie where the song is playing and I couldn't find one. So I don't know if it wasn't actually in the movie. It's just on the soundtrack.
Yeah, it's a killer soundtrack. It's got The Cramps. It's got Rocky Erickson.
Weird.
The Damned.
The Damned. What Damned song?
Deadbeat Dance.
Don't know.
So more gothy.
Yeah, Damned. Later one.
Yeah.
That was on Enigma Records. Maybe that's what... Maybe that's their connection. Yeah, The Flesh Eaters, which in an earlier test run of this, I had pulled them up as one of my bands. Yeah, who else was on there? Yeah, those are the big ones. I'm not sure who SSQ and the Jet Black Berries are. I should go watch that movie again, though. It's fun. They also had a song on another soundtrack. The song Revenge was featured on a movie called Dangerously Close. I have no idea what that movie is. But they made a music video out of that song, and they included like, clips from the movie. And it looks like kind of like a gang movie, but like an 80s gang movie. So, like, there's guys in, there's guys dressed like suicidal tendencies, you know, like the checkered button-ups all the way to the neck and, like, bandanas. Mm-hmm. And, but then there's also, like, these traditional mob guys in it who are, like 30s mob guys with long trench coats and hats. And I was like, I don't know what this movie's about. Maybe we should watch it, though, if it's got, like, a punk connection to it. It's probably one of those, like, lost 80s punk movies.
Is this movie like a secret influence on what, Deadly Class, the Remender comic?
I wonder, because
it's, that's at an elite school, a group of students who call themselves the Sentinels begin terrorizing their socially undesirable classmates.
Huh, interesting. Well, that would make sense because Rick Remender has
got a punk soundtrack. I mean, it's got TSOL and the Smithereens and
yeah, the punk band the Smithereens.
Yeah, well, it's got TSOL in it, so.
Yeah.
It's got a weird soundtrack. It's got Black Uhuru.
That's reggae, right?
Yeah. Green on Red. It's a psychedelic band.
Huh.
Ooh, Tucson band.
Green on Red.
So. First Wave Desert Rock. Interesting. I'll have to look them up.
And they also had a music video for the song Colors, and it's weird. It's like, the band is playing in a on a giant stage, but it's a completely empty room besides the band. You know, that's that old trope. And the lead singer's hair is humongous. It's gigantic hair. And then, like, the video is this weird, like, they keep cutting to these, like, cowboys riding on horses, and then, like, a woman from that time period is, like, reaching out, trying to touch Joe Wood's hand the whole time in the video, and it's not a good video, but it's just very weird. And that was a weird song, too, because that's a slower track.
Yeah.
So, looking at the band's history, you know, they finding out about, like, different vocalists and different musicians, it made me want to look at, like, the band's full history as far as like what happened after. So in case we never do TSOL ever again on the show, which is a possibility, because there's very high possibility we'll never do TSOL again, I wanted to like basically say what happened to the band after this.
Right.
So
this associated acts list is huge.
Yeah. And that's mostly from the later era, like in the 90s and on. So the original members, the other two original members who were still in the band at this point, later leave the band in, like, the 90s, like, 90, 91. And so the original, so Joe Wood and Mitch Dean decided to tour Brazil and Argentina as TSOL because there's no way that Jack Grisham and the rest of the guys can stop them from doing that. And so they have a hire a gang of ringers to play music for them.
Yeah.
And then so then sometime in the 90s, the original lineup began playing shows again under the name TSOL, and a lot of times they would play in the same cities on the same night as Joe Wood and Dean Mitch's Mitch Dean's TSOL. But at this, somehow, probably by maintaining membership in the band, Wood and Dean wound up owning the name TSOL. So I'm assuming it was some weird clause in their contract where, because they were releasing albums under the name TSOL, they're still actively playing with that name.
They maintained the trademark.
Yeah. So then they tried to sue the original members from using the name TSOL. So they released a live album at one point, and they had to release it under the name Grisham, Roche, Emery, and Barnes, which is, you know, just their names. And then sometimes they would play under the name Lost, which is TSOL backwards.
Nice.
So in 1999, the original members fought and won back the name, though later that year, the original drummer, Todd Barnes, died of an aneurysm, so they didn't really get to play very long as TSOL with their original full lineup. But they never stopped playing, and they've pretty much existed, like, permanently. Since they formed in, like, 79, they've never really broken up. Like, they took some hiatuses, but that's pretty impressive for a punk band. And it's so funny, because no one really cares about TSOL.
Yeah, they're a name that you know, and they get talked about a little bit, just kind of in the general history of punk. But yeah, I guess because of that weird caveat into their rock,
yeah,
period, and then lawsuit. And so have they put out music since, like, the original lineup? Have they put out music since?
Yes.
Or are they just playing the old stuff?
Yes, they actually did start releasing music in... So, the Joe Wood lineup, they released four albums. It was Change Today, Revenge, Hit and Run, and Strange Love. Strange Love came out in 1990, and then the original lineup, well, minus the original drummer, started recording albums in 2001, and they've released four albums. Disappear, Divided We Stand, Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Free Downloads, and The Trigger Complex, which came out last year.
Okay.
And I've listened to them. They're very low rated compared to other TSOL albums, like even Joe Wood albums. I was surprised because these songs are way better than like the last two Joe Wood fronted albums that are awful. I don't know why the reviews are so much lower for these. I don't know. They're different. I guess this is what happens whenever you continuously play music, you evolve your sound. So they're not like straight up 70s, you know, 80s LA punk anymore, but they're not that far off from it either. It's interesting. They're not terrible, but I definitely like the earlier material the best. So this album has a 3.17 on Rate Your Music, and it's their lowest rated up to that point. Their next album, Hit and Run, has a 2.51, and that is their lowest rated album. And it's understandable why.
So I'm looking at the Associated Acts, and it's got so many bands, like Bad Religion.
Yes. Someone filled in on guitar between Jack Grisham and Joe Wood taking over. I think that was one of the Bad Religion guys.
But then and Uniform Choice. But then there's also like the Dickies. Head PE.
Yeah. There's a
Sugar Ray. Yeah. But
Uniform Choice. Yeah.
So who was in... I'm assuming whoever was in Sugar Ray was also in Head PE.
I don't think so. See. Compilation album titled Hell and Back Together in 84 to 90 was issued in 1992 with an emphasis on the metal era. Murphy Carges, leader of Sugar Ray, replaced Roche on bass. He was then replaced by touring bassist Josh also. So what's the Head PE connection? Here we go. Okay, so this is from 1999. After Todd Barnes died of a brain aneurysm, the remaining members recruited Jay O'Brien, formerly of All Day and later of American Jihad, and released the Anti-Cop single in 2001, and the album Disappear in 2001, and Divided We Stand, all on Nitro Records, RIP Nitro Records, the latter of which featured Kun, who I did not see his name, Kuhn back on, I'm not sure how to pronounce that, K-U-E-H-N, back on keyboards, as well as Billy Blaze replacing O'Brien. So Anthony Tiny... God, there's so many members of this band. Anthony Tiny Biuso, formerly of Rude Awakening, Bad Example, Full Metal Racket, and the Dickies, also later of Head PE and Doyle, which I think is
Doyle von Frankenstein.
Yeah. He joined the band on drums in 2003 and remained until 2014, serving as the longest-standing drummer in the band's three-decade history. Interesting.
Weird.
That guy has been the drummer longer than any other member. Yeah, it's weird.
Very strange history, the convoluted history of TSOL.
Yeah. Yeah, I was reading, and they were apparently like one of the most violent bands in LA, in like the original hardcore scene. But they were like an Orange County band too, so it was like just kind of preppy, you know, suburban kids who had real, real bad attitudes.
they were from Long Beach.
yeah, they're a Long Beach band.
Yeah.
What would you rate this album on a scale of 1 to 5 with the quarter points between?
I want to say probably general first impression, maybe like a 3.25.
Wow.
Yours. Like just a little bit above average. Really liked the guitar sound and kind of the general sound of it. I mean, how much of it would stick with me over time, I don't know. But
yeah. Mine is not nearly as high as yours. I would only give it a 2.5. It's competent. It's well played. None of the songs like stuck with me at all. None of the melodies really stood out to me. Yeah, I just wasn't crazy about it.
Yeah, I don't know. It was interesting.
So, well, you want to move on to our EP?
Yeah.
Cool.
I'd like to know more about this one because All I know is what they sound like and what their artwork looks like.
Yeah.
Both of which were surprising.
Yeah.
Considering it was 1986.
So, our EP for this week is the number 91 on our charts, and it is Born Without a Face, The Unbecoming.
Yeah, not what I expected. Like, the artwork is like a modern crust band.
Yeah, I am.
And that's kind of what they sound like.
They, yeah, kind of. They have a very dark, I'd say sludgy, almost, sound. I don't know if that's just poor recording or if it, you know, or what, but it's interesting. It's a little six-minute EP. Four songs.
If you Google this band, put the word band in your search terms.
I had that warning as well because I saw some videos of actual babies born without faces pop up on YouTube when I was originally searching it. I guess I should have mentioned earlier, the TSO album is available on Spotify, so you can listen to it there. This EP is not on Spotify, but it is on Bandcamp, so you can find it there, or you can listen to it on YouTube, because there's a single, like a 6-minute video of the entire EP on there. They are a Grand Rapids, Michigan band.
Yeah.
Self-released this EP. Actually, all of their music was self-released at one point. The personnel on this album is Robert Eastway on vocals, Dan Ross on guitar, Mark Dancy on bass, and Eric Dancy on drums. I did not know a single one of those names. I was wondering if there was going to be like a weird, like, oh, this person wound up playing bass for, you know, TSOL in 1989. Yeah. So, like, I clicked on, like, the side projects, and the bass player, Mark Dancy, was also in a band called Big Chief, which shared lead singers with the band The Necros, who is a band that I'm aware of. I know they're important. I've never listened to them. So that's, yeah, that's pretty neat. That's a little bit of a connection to something. You actually know who Mark Dancy is, but you don't know his name. So Mark Dancy also became like an artist of sorts, and he did a lot of album covers. And the most famous album cover he wound up doing was Soundgarden's Bad Motorfinger. Which is the circle on the front with like the geometric shapes on it. Yeah. That's a pretty famous album cover.
Hmm.
So I thought that was kind of neat.
Yeah, Mark Dancy. That's...
I'm sure he's getting residuals for that for the rest of his life.
All those t-shirts.
Yeah, I hope he is. Oh, I hope he's getting paid for those.
Probably not.
Yeah.
Interesting artist.
Yeah, it's very... Yeah, a lot of his stuff looks similar to that.
Yeah.
But it's, yeah... Unique.
Kind of like psych.
Mm-hmm. Which weird. Makes sense, because I think that band Big Chief was like a psych band, sort of. I didn't listen to them. I didn't feel the need to. I thought the vocals were kind of like thrashy, you know what I mean? Like, I heard some like James Hetfield almost to it, you know?
Yeah, they did definitely remind me of like Corrosion of Conformity, and
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was really just interesting. I can't say that it was like great,
yeah,
but for the time period, for being from Grand Rapids,
yeah, they're not really known for their contributions to the punk scene, you know. I kind of thought the music sounded a little bit like Earth AD Misfits.
Yeah.
Like heavy, bassy, kind of thrashy.
Nothing
to hook on to.
Memorable. No hooks.
Yeah.
Yeah, just...
Did you notice that the B-side sounded like a completely different band, though? Like, tracks 3 and 4?
Yeah, not... I didn't pay that super close
attention. Yeah, it...
To be honest.
That one sounded more like an East Coast band, like a lot of reverb on the vocals, and like, you know, like kind of like Faith Void type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting, because that wasn't really their sound, because I went and listened to some of the other stuff they put out, and they also put out another EP this same year called... They put out another EP in 1986 called Worship. And I wound up liking that one a little better because it had a more cohesive sound. And it's weird because that EP has a cover of The Heartbreak Hotel by Elvis.
Weird.
And it sounds nothing like it, so I don't...
Right.
I don't know why they decided to do that. Other than just, I guess, to be the hardcore band that covered Elvis.
Nobody's done this before.
Yeah.
Or since.
Yeah. They kind of reminded me of like a primitive version of Rorschach.
Yeah. You know, definitely. I can definitely see that.
I feel like that was like the next step in this sound. Because a lot of hardcore bands around this time period weren't doing a lot of metallic stuff. And when they did, it was just like thrash metal crossover. You know?
It was like, yeah, it was like Suicidal Tendencies.
Yeah.
Or...
COC.
Yeah, I guess the only other like metallically minded hardcore band of that I can think of is like my Discharge.
You know, I don't know.
Yeah,
Discharge are one of those bands I don't know that I've ever actually listened to, which is for guys They're who okay. run a punk podcast. That's pretty bad, I think. But yeah, so both of these EPs were remastered and re-released in a box set with the band's full-length album, Freak Show, on Sergeant Cherry Records a couple years ago. So if you listen to it and you like it, you can purchase it. Again, I think TSOL's Revenge was also repressed for Record Store Day a few years ago, so they should be easy to find. I don't know that one sold very well. I wasn't very familiar with it.
Yeah. This is old. Let's re-release it for Record Store Day.
Yeah. We own this. What does EMI own? Oh, yeah. We have this.
what does EMI own? Everything.
God. Yeah. So, what would you...
We bought entire discographies just for, like, the one platinum record that record label released, and then so that we can re-release it and get all this money for it. And then now we own all this whole back catalog of records that we'll do nothing with. And put them on Spotify.
Make pennies off of it.
Yeah.
So what would you... I know you didn't pay too much attention to it, so what would you rate this one?
Probably like a 2.5. Just kind of... It was interesting. Didn't sound bad, but didn't hook me in any way, really.
Yeah. I gave it a 2.75 just because it felt unique to 86. You know, there wasn't a ton of this kind of stuff going on back then. I mean, maybe. There were probably a shitload of EPs that came out this exact same year that sounded just like it, but who knows?
We didn't say this would be exhaustive.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Well, yeah. I can't listen to everything.
Somewhat informative.
The LPs at this time didn't sound like this, is what I'll say.
Yeah.
So this sound was just developing. Well, cool. Looks like we are at...
An hour.
All right. Well, I guess that'll do it for this week. So, one of the things I wanted to do with this show is to let you guys know what we're going to be doing next week so that you can play along at home, basically, to give everyone a chance to, listen to it before the next episode so that you're not just trying to imagine what the EP sounds like or an album sounds like. So,
yeah, you can come do it with your own opinions.
Yeah. And you can go
trying to dictate what you should think about it.
Right. You could be like, hey, I really like that record. And if you like it, tell us why. So, next week's episode, we wound up with the year 2006. And for the album, we got number 226. And it is from Run Kid Run. This is Who We Are. Do you know who that is?
No.
You don't?
Not at all.
You don't know who Run Kid Run are? They were a Tooth and Nail Records band.
What year did you say?
2006.
2006.
Right when we got out of Tooth and Nail.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Jeez.
So I'm looking forward to that one, just mainly because I want to talk about Tooth and Nail. So that's on Spotify. And for the EP...
Of course it is.
Yeah, everything they put out is there. For the EP, we got number 195, and it's a band called For the Mathematics. And the EP is called We Impend. Impend. It's on Spotify as well. So that should be a fun episode. Anything else you want to say before we wrap it up?
No. Yeah. Just, yeah. Next episode will be interesting.
Yeah. So if you want to get in touch with us or you want to follow us online, we have a Twitter and it is just Punk Lotto Pod. That's the handle. There's not really anything on it right now, but
catchy.
Yeah. If you want to add us, go for it. We also have an email address if you're not on Twitter, and it is punklottopod@gmail.com. So we're pretty easy to find.
Send us your opinions. Yep. We want to hear from you.
If you were a
member... What did you think of TSOL's Revenge?
Are you Stephen Blush? Are you going to email me and tell me that my opinion is wrong?
Wrong.
Do you know anything about Born Without a Face? Are you a member of Born Without a Face? Yeah. Yeah. So if you have any questions for us, if you want to know more about us, if you have any corrections for us, like if, no, you idiots, you got this wrong.
We're open to your criticisms.
Yeah. Tell us what we can do. Just don't tell us, like, you guys suck. I mean...
Be more constructive with your criticism.
Yeah. Yeah. And don't complain about mouth noises or anything like that.
Recording quality sucks.
This is a lo-fi operation, dude. Cool.
It's punk.
It's DIY. Whatever. It's punk. It's crust. It's whatever. Well, cool. I guess we check out those albums for next week and come back and hear us talk about mid-2000s Christian punk.
Christian punk. It'll be illuminating.
Yeah. Well, all right. I guess we'll see you guys later.
All right.